The Variety Artist, episode 10. This one's all about how to be your own booking agent, getting great gigs and booking better tours. I'm sitting down right now and I'm eating a chocolate cake. You see, every time I reach another goal, I treat myself to something cool, whether it be a nice dinner, a round of mini golf. And now I'm sitting down to edit and put together my 10th episode. It's my second goal. I went and bought myself a chocolate cake. And I had happy 10th episode written on the top in my favorite icing. And I'm eating it. And it's good. You see, right now, I'm being listened to in 14 different countries, 33 different states in the U.S., and I have you to thank. As a special thanks, I'm putting together a free copywriting checklist. Have you ever looked at a blank page or sales letter or postcard and said, "Where do I start?" Well, this checklist will get you going. You could be one of the first to get it. Just go to my website at thevarietyartist.com and sign up to be one of the first to be notified. I'm working hard on it now. It'll be done soon. If you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to this podcast on your phone or mobile device and tell a friend. It really helps me a lot. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. They're offering you, the Variety Artist, a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at thevarietyartist.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Just go to thevarietyartist.com/book right after this podcast and get your free audiobook. Now let's start the show.
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
Our guest today is a former agent and manager, now author and music business and performing arts career coach. She's the author of Amazon's number one music business book, How to Be Your Own Booking Agent, the Musicians and Performing Artists Guide to Successful Touring. Her 7-module online course, Booking and Touring Success Strategies and Secrets, has helped hundreds of performing artists get great gigs and book better tours. She's presented live seminars internationally at industry conferences and arts councils in the U.S. and Canada. Her free action-oriented weekly audio messages, Biz Booster Hot Tips, offer step-by-step strategies and techniques to help performing artists reach their career goals. Variety Artists, I am proud and privileged to have with me today, Jerry Goldstein.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing, Jerry?
I'm great. Already up and exercised and walk the dog and ready to talk with you. And I'm 3 hours ahead of you and you're back at 7 o'clock.
That's right. It's 7 o'clock in the morning. And I have my coffee in front of me and I have also walked my dog.
All right, great.
So we're set to go.
Cool.
Now, tell me about your life before being a career coach.
Okay, well, I had been a booking agent for 20 years, working with acoustic artists and dance and children's artists, some jazz, some theater. So kind of the full gamut, booking international tours, booking national tours for them, managing them, doing publishing. So really running the full gamut of dealing with artist career development. Earlier than that, I had been doing concert promotion, running my college coffee house, and meeting a lot of these artists that later on I would actually end up working with because I thought that I could do a better job for them than whatever was going on for them at that moment.
So you started this whole adventure in your college days?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, I saw this college coffee house that was being run really poorly, and I joined the committee and ended up taking over and renovating the coffee house. And I had, when I opened up, I had lines going around the block, around the student union, and ran the coffee house 5 nights a week with ice cream sundaes and what would then become, you know, coffee lattes and all of those specialty coffee drinks. I was doing that before it became specialty coffee drinks. And would have the same artist 5 nights a week and would then go on to finding a couple of those artists that I sort of booked for my coffee house, and I helped them get gigs at a couple other colleges right nearby,
okay.
essentially helping them have a tour. And then when I stopped doing that, graduated, I ended up finding a couple of those artists who I was able to sign and start working with.
So it was
professionally.
It was a fairly easy transition from college doing what you love to do to working in an agency doing the same thing.
Well, it was my own agency. I didn't even know at the time that there were other agencies because I was just flying by the seat of my pants, thinking that, well, if I did these little mini tours for these artists who were coming to my own coffee house, I guess I could do bigger tours for them professionally. Just started creating my own agency. Who knew? Yeah, little did I know that when I was going to college for art therapy, that I was going to end up being an artist therapist.
Oh, that's so funny, huh?
Yeah. It's all about the therapy, right?
So it makes it easier for you to talk to performers like me.
Exactly. Right. Getting down into your mindset.
Now, I just signed up for your tips and strategies, and I just I just got my first one. I was very excited about that, and It talks about this 2-year plan. Now, tell me about the 2-year planning cycle.
Oh, well, you know, a lot of artists that I talked to, even some of the artists that I was working with, their focus was going to be on the next gig or the next month of gigs, as opposed to having a broader vision of their career. I really focus on a 2-year planning cycle where, you know, oftentimes I'll suggest artists get one of those laminated Office Depot calendars that have like a 1-year calendar where they fill in the squares.
Yeah.
So that you can have, but get two of them. So you have two of them on the wall, and it's a very visual thing so that you can look up, you're talking on the phone to somebody who's calling about, you know, a particular date, and you can, and I always suggest, so take the things that you know about your life already, whether it's already booked gigs, whether it's vacations, whether it's your cousin's wedding, whether it's a conference you want to go to or a festival that you want to play or a corporate gig that you see looming out there in February, and here it is only, you know, it's like May the year before. And stick those potential things on your calendar in possibly multicolor magic markers so mm-hmm. that, you know, everything, you know, a gig that's already booked is green and a gig that you want to book is blue, you know, so that you can really have this visual reminder, consistent reminder of what you've got coming up. So as you look at that and somebody is calling you about next May, and here it is this May 2018, and somebody's calling you about May 2019, and you look up at your calendar and you see the end of April, you have this wedding you're going to, that's your cousin's wedding.
Yes.
And it's on the calendar already. So now you take this broad view of, well, okay, if this person wants me to be in, you know, Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and the wedding is in Chicago, well, maybe I can put some things in between Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and Chicago and stay out there for 2 weeks. You're only thinking about what do I have coming up next week or what do I have coming up next month, you don't have that long-term vision of where you could be or what kind of tours you can actually be formulating far in advance. And so this 2-year planning cycle allows you to say, oh, there's this conference I want to go to. Hmm. Well, what are the deadlines for the conference? How can I get in on the early bird registration fees? Or how can I make sure I don't miss the registration for showcasing applications? And you have that on your calendar and you see it and you put the deadlines on there. So now you're ahead of the game and you're looking forward. Your career has some momentum. You can say, oh, the conference is in Texas. Well, what can get me from Los Angeles to Texas and back? and let me start planning that now because I know I'm going to the conference.
And it seems like that does a couple of different things too. Not only does it give you a good representation of where you're going to be at what time, but I'm a firm believer in vision boards.
Right. There you go.
So every morning when you wake up and you look at that vision board or that calendar, you're saying to yourself consciously and subconsciously, I'm going to be successful because here are the things that I'm going to be doing.
Exactly. Exactly. And by having that longer vision, you're not only able to stay ahead of the game and get in on, you know, conference fees and showcase fees and application timeframes, deadlines, but then you're also able to plan those tours so that you can say, oh, okay, I'd like to take 2 weeks and go and do something specific 2 weeks from now. I mean, you know, in that 2 week time frame on the way to this wedding or this conference, and you can see what your actual time frame allows you because you're looking forward. You're in the mode of forward thinking.
Right. And you can set those goals as you see them every morning.
Right. Right. And so then you're not sitting there, you know, overlooking the abyss where you've hit the end of the tour in June 2nd. Okay. That's the end of the tour. And now you're in the mode of no gigs. You have nothing scheduled. You have nothing to look forward to because now you have to like, oh my God, I've got to get some gigs. I've got, you know, an empty calendar. I mean, right. The empty calendar syndrome is one that so many artists know and obviously hate to see that happening.
I think it's changed over the years, too, because I remember years ago, before the 2008 crash, my calendar would be booked up a year in advance.
Right.
And now I'm noticing that I actually get calls 2 months before or a month before the gig.
Well, but then the other aspect to this is depending on what kind of gigs you actually book, the 2 year planning cycle allows you to work with organizations or corporate entities or performing arts centers that do book really far in advance. You know, like a performing arts center is going to book 18 to 24 months in advance. And if you're not on their schedule and you're thinking you're going to get a gig at a beautiful performing arts center because you're going to happen to be in that area at the time, and it's like September and you want a gig for November, well, forget about it.
Good luck.
Yeah, right. Right. And corporate gigs in particular, you know, they're planning 4 years ahead because they have to make their reservations for the whatever hotel or civic center or conference venue they're going to be having. So they know 4 years in advance that their 2019 conference has been planned for many years earlier. They know where it's going to be. They know the time frame. And the only thing that they're left to do is create their programming, which they do about a year to 6 months out. But if you're on a 2 month time frame, you've missed that opportunity.
So I know a lot of folks that are listening to this book a lot of Christmas events. You know, it's a big corporate event.
Right. And it's funny, it happens every year, right?
Exactly. So you would suggest then that they contact them a year in advance, 6 to 6 months in advance?
Yeah. I mean, you know, all they can say to you is we're not planning that yet. And then you turn around and say, well, when will you be planning that? And you put that on your calendar. So then you know when to call them. You know, have your own little tickler. So, for instance, a lot of festivals, they will start planning their festival event while the festival is happening, especially if it's like a yearly event. You know, they're looking at how things are going as they're going. While performers are on the main stage, they're going, yeah, well, how can I use these guys again next year? Or, boy, I better not book those guys again next year. You know, and so they're really thinking about it a year in advance, and then they'll take the next year to begin their planning. Mm-hmm. But if you're last-minute Nelly, you're not going to be playing that event.
Right, because by the time you contact them, they're already booked up. And
they're already booked up. You know, how many times have I heard, you know, artists say, yeah, I really want to do some festivals this summer. Well, this summer is here. Right. So I really love the 2-year planning cycle so that people are ahead of the game. They start, you know, and then they can also say, let's say you call somebody and they are booked this year. But if you have, and this is another thing that we'll talk about a little bit later, but if you already know that, well, you're going to be in that area again at the same time next year or the year after, you can say, okay, well, let's put a hold on a date for 2019, for 2020, because I'm going to be in your area at that same time. So how about if we put a hold and then we'll get back and confirm it when it works for both of us?
There you go.
So now you're planning ahead. And then if you have a hold on a date 18 months out, well, now that could be the beginning of a tour that you could, again, be planning now.
Right. And now you're looking at your calendar and you're saying, well, I'm going to be in Northern California at this date.
That's right.
I need to be in Texas by that date.
Right.
Well, let's see what we can do in between.
Exactly. And now if somebody happens to call you and they say, you know, hi, I'm in Texas. And you go, well, I'm going to be in Texas in XYZ date. And you now have the momentum of building tours way far into the future. So you're not standing on that cliff looking out at an empty calendar.
Completely makes sense.
Yeah.
One of the things that I do is I have a software called ShowOps, and a lot of folks have different types of software that reminds them to make those phone calls. So if it doesn't fit on your calendar and you look at your calendar, you say, gosh, I got to call this person that is such and such a date, such and such a time. Right. You can also put it in your database, right?
You know, and I think the visual wall calendar is kind of like, it's not going to have your daily to-do list on it.
Right.
You know, that goes into your planner, your lead generator, you know, all of your computer stuff. But as you're looking out that visual reminder, because, like, you know, you walk into your office, your computer's not open, your phone, you know, is asleep for a little bit, for a few seconds, and those ticklers are not popping up. But if you see that visual reminder, that vision board of a wall calendar, and it goes, oh man, look at that sticking out there in 7 months. I better put some things around that, you know, and then you can go into your daily planner and you start making your call list or your research list and stuff like that. So it kind of works. It marries well together.
Yeah, that's great. And every night you go to bed looking at that thing.
And you start to think about it and, you know, like ruminate over the whole thing of, you know, wait, tomorrow morning, boy, maybe I can really start working on that tour. And it keeps the momentum going.
I love that idea. I'm going to implement that today.
Great.
Creating touring preferences. Tell me about that. How do you create touring preferences?
Let's take you for an example. Okay. So what kind of gigs do you like to do?
I do mainly school assemblies, and this year, my kids just got old enough where I'm not doing all local shows.
Okay, so now
you're touring. One of the things that I did is I transitioned from doing weekend gigs to doing weekday gigs about 15 years ago.
Right.
So now, they're old enough to take care of themselves, so this year I'm planning, right now, I'm glad I'm talking to you, because right now I'm planning my Northern California tour.
Okay, so now let's look at your life. So when you think about your life, you know, in the past, your kids were younger, so that immediately said to you, well, okay, I'm not going to be touring helter-skelter all over the country and be away for longer than, say, a weekend, right?
Right.
So that's a touring preference. That's a thing that delineates your needs as a person, as with a family, as opposed to a 20-year-old artist who doesn't have any responsibilities, who could be out on the road for 6 months at a time, or, you know, 2 weeks or 4 months, whatever. That's their touring preference. So you have looked at your life and said, here's how I need to live my life. Now, how am I going to design my touring timeframes to fit with my life? Am I going to be working at 11 o'clock at night in a nightclub and coming home at 2, 3 in the morning and having to get the kids up at 7 o'clock? No, that's not going to work for you. Mm-hmm. So your touring preferences incorporate how do you like to live? So, like, do you like to be out on tour for Thursday, Friday, Saturday and be home by Sunday dinner? Do you like to be in a soft seat theater and play a show at 7 or 8 o'clock and be home by 10? Do you like to be in a noisy, smoky bar and play your show at 11 p.m. and be home at 2 or 3 in the morning?
That reminds me of a lot of different things that are going through my head right now. I just interviewed Danny Taylor, who does a lot of Broadway, and he does national tours.
Right.
And he's a young man. He's married. He has no kids.
Right.
So for him, being out on the road for a year is completely fine.
Right.
For me, that's not fine.
Right.
I have a number of other magician friends that do a lot of restaurants.
Right.
So they're gone 4 or 5 nights a week doing restaurants, which is perfect for them because they don't have kids and they don't need to be home to help them with their homework.
Exactly.
So for them, it's perfect.
Right. So that's the touring preferences part of, you know, designing how you like to tour with how you like to live. I kind of look at all of this stuff as a very organic, natural way of looking at your lifestyle and fitting your lifestyle to your touring, as opposed to messing up your life in order to work your tours and then, you know, having relationship problems because you're not working your tours in accordance with how your life is being laid out.
I think what a lot of people do is when they first start this business, they say, oh, I want as many gigs as I possibly can, no matter where they are, no matter what I'm doing. And all of a sudden, and that's one of the traps that I kind of fell in when I first started.
Right.
All of a sudden, you're gone away from your kids or you're gone away from your wife or your husband.
Exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, and that's another piece of the puzzle. How many gigs do you actually really need? And based on starting with your numbers, you know, like, okay, do you want to earn $50,000 in performance fees? Do you want to earn $200,000 in performance fees? What are your needs? You know, if you're living in LA and your costs are really high, you may need to, you know, a $200 gig is not going to make it. You may need to have, you know, more $2,000 gigs to pay your bills. So all of these things will delineate how and define what kind of venue do you need to be playing in if you need to be making $200,000 a year? Mm-hmm. You know, you can't be playing house concerts for a possibility of who knows how much money. You have to be playing certain kinds of gigs that give you the income. So that's going to eliminate all of the non-starter gigs. So why waste your time with a list of directories of gigs when half of those gigs or three quarters of those gigs are not for you? So by creating your touring preferences, you all of a sudden hone in on what's the right thing. You hone in on your time frame. You hone in on your time away from home, on the road. Maybe you're the person that likes to sleep in your bed every single night and not be in hotels. Well, that's going to define where, when, and what type of venue you're going to be able to go after. And you have to really assess your home community to know what's available.
Hmm. So the first step of this would be writing down exactly what you want. Yeah, exactly.
but you know, not so much what you want first. I mean, the first step is to understand your life and your lifestyle so that you write down what you want based on how you need to live. I mean, there were artists that I work with that were teaching professors, and they only had Thursday, Friday, and Saturday to tour. Mm-hmm. You know, they could leave Thursday night, and they could be someplace, and then start doing gigs Friday, Saturday, and they had to be back Monday morning so they could fly back Sunday night. So it was a very constrained touring time period, but we made it work. And then during the summer or vacations, we had big blocks of time that were off. So you can make work what you need. So then in that case, you know, 200, 300 dates a year were not possible. But what we determined was, well, what dates are possible? When is it appropriate? How far can you go in a weekend time frame, given air travel, and you know what kind of gigs you're going to have to get, because now you're not driving down the block, you're not talking gas, you're talking airline tickets.
Sure.
And are you taking bandmates with you, or are you doing this solo? If you're doing it with groups, are you flying? Are you driving? Do you need to rent a van? Do you need to drive in somebody else's van? Is everyone going to meet there? All these questions determine what kinds of gigs you ought to be going after to make sense of a touring career that's not just all over the place.
No, that's the perfect place to start.
Yeah.
Is writing down your goals, your monetary
exactly.
goals, your life, yeah. your life yeah. goals.
Right. I mean, who are you? Who are you as an artist, and who do you want to be as an artist? You know, and how do you go from step one of, gee, I'd like to be an artist and have some gigs to, yeah, I got my tour bus and I've got my road manager and I've got my team in place. It takes steps to get there. You don't get there like, I'd like to be a touring artist and I'd like to have a booking agency, a management firm, a tour bus, a driver, and a 7-piece band with trucks behind following in the semi.
And I've never done it, and I have never done a show before.
Exactly. So, and before you get into the recording studio, find out if you have an audience, you mm-hmm. know, that kind of. So touring preferences, I think they allow you to refine your possibilities without spending years discovering, oh, gee, I hate playing in bars at 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
That really, like, it cuts down on years of experimenting.
Yeah, makes sense.
And then it changes as you evolve, as your life changes, you know. So now you're a solo 20-year-old touring performer out on the road. You can do whatever you want. And then you get married.
Right.
And your wife is not on the road with you, or your partner's not on the road with you. You have to be closer at home so that you could be home more nights. And so refine, adjust, make some, you know, tweaks to the original plan that now fit the new lifestyle.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did, and that's what I suggest everybody else does too.
Right.
To look at your life, especially if there are major changes in your life.
Right.
You know, marriage, divorce, kids.
Kids, right.
Kids. That's the one that seems to
taking care of elderly parents, you know. I mean, that's another thing. I know a lot of artists who have, the older artists who have that in their lives now, having to curtail touring because they have to take care of a senior parent.
I haven't thought of that. I never thought of that. Luckily, I haven't been in that situation.
Right, but
you
know,
there are a lot of people that are.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, all those kinds of things really make to formulate a plan of action that is commensurate with your life, as opposed to trying to crazy up your life to fit this dream that's either unrealistic. Or you're not there yet.
Makes complete sense to me.
Yeah. And the other touring preference thing I want to throw in there is also how you tour might dictate where you go. So, you know, when I used to work with artists who were traveling in an RV, going to the Northeast in the winter was not necessarily the best plan, right? Because you have an RV, pipes freeze in an RV. So, you know, planning your tour routing for your mode of travel and for where you're going to have the least amount of cancellations, you know, like touring in the winter in the Northeast, there's snowstorms, there's blizzards, there's weather events that might curtail your event. So thinking about how do you travel and where would you like to be during specific time frames of the year to take advantage of weather and ease of travel and more people turning out is also a consideration.
It might even curtail you just getting there.
Well, there you go. I mean, not only that, that's right. If you're touring, if you're playing, you know, 55 plus communities, for instance, well, go to Arizona in the wintertime, go to Florida in the wintertime, because that's where all those people are going to be, the snowbirds. If you're playing elementary schools, well, they have a season. You know, you can't play elementary schools in the summertime. So obviously you have to plan where and go with the academic year. You know, where you tour and what kind of touring you do, all that fits into your touring preferences, that if you know you like to be warm in the winter, well, then plan your tour going to the South.
<You know? laughs> Or the West.
And if you know that you like to ski, for instance, well, then that opens up a whole other ballgame of where you can possibly tour. You know, yeah. Including the types of venues that may not be mainstream venues, but ski lodges. That goes along with, you know, targeting niche touring markets. But that's part of this, you know, what are your touring preferences?
Yeah, I'm kind of spoiled here because I'm in Southern California.
Yeah, so right.
I do gigs year round.
Right.
Gigs during the school year, and then
exactly.
Then during the summer, a lot of camps and libraries and different things.
Sure.
Like that. But I see on Facebook occasionally, I'll see some friends that are in the East and the Northeast, and during the winter, they're shutting down.
That's right. Right. And so when you think about that, if that's where you live, then during the wintertime might be a perfect time for planning recording projects or creating new show projects if that's a shutdown. Or there are schools elsewhere. So pack up and go on tour, you know, in the southern part of the country and do schools down in those areas or libraries or other venues that do exist and are running perfectly normally without weather events down in other parts of the country.
Sure. I really like your idea. Well, there are two different ideas there. First going, of course, to another part of like flying south for the winter, like birds do.
Right.
But I really like the idea is if you look at that calendar and you say, well, this particular month, I can't book any gigs because it's winter. Right. I'm going to take that month to create new shows and be creative and
right.
be home and do those things.
Right.
And actually have that written down as opposed to how a lot of folks do it where, oh, I have some extra time here. I have some extra time there.
Exactly.
I'll put something together in the next hour or two because I happen to have it free.
Right. Yeah. But that way you're planning it and you're, you know, again, you're setting your mind to this upcoming event that is your planning time frame. You know, your energies, you're starting to focus. You're starting to get ideas. You're starting to, you know, marinate in your mind what things you could come up with. You know, you're doing some research, you're checking in with the elementary school standards of learning, what's going to be the hot buttons for next year that you need to incorporate into your, you know, upcoming shows so that you could fit in. Yeah.
I know the way my brain works, if I'm looking at that every day, I'm seeing things as right. I'm going through my day that are giving me good ideas on what I can put together next.
Right, right. So it's starting to formulate, you know, you may not be right there, but then by the time it comes time for that time period to sit down and actually start working, you've been working.
Right.
Your subconscious has already got things churning away.
Makes sense. What do you think about cold calling?
I don't like it.
you and me both.
And I don't know many people that do like it. You know, I mean, the whole concept of lists of hundreds of sales calls just kind of makes my skin crawl. And personally, I think that a better method of, you know, reducing those cold calls is to make sure that, I like to say, go through your contact list of previous contracts and pull out old contacts from gigs in the past, you know, and if you're just starting and you don't have any gigs, well, then come up with ideas from, say, friends or even businesses that you do business with or local community people that you do business with, restaurants that you often go to. But if you are a touring artist already and have previous gigs, then go look at your old contracts and pull out all those contacts. And even though maybe some of those people have moved on, you still played the venue, you still played the gig.
Right.
And you make that return phone call to the person that you already know and they already know you. And even if they're gone, you have that as a entree point where you say, oh, I played at your school or your venue or your corporate right. event, you know, in 2012, and I worked with so-and-so. Oh, yeah, well, so-and-so's gone, but now Joe is doing it. Great, well, let me talk to Joe. And now you still have an entree. It's a new person, but you did the event. Here's the results of what you did. Here's who you worked with. Here's how many people turned up. Here were some of the testimonials from that last time. And now you're making a friendly call. And you go back to that person and you ask them for, one, another gig, two, some referrals to other events similar to their own that might also enjoy what you do. And three, if it was a gig that you just recently did, I always like to make this particular return follow-up phone call right away, you know, like right after the gig.
Yep.
And so the third one right after the gig, you know, so now they've got all this enthusiasm. You just were there. Everybody loved it. Everybody's being very excited about what just happened. This is the perfect time to ask them for a great testimonial.
I give the exact same advice.
Right. Oh, good, good, good. Yeah. So, but the referral thing is like when you're talking to them, who else do they know that would appreciate what you do? And now you're turning around and you're going, you're calling Joe because John sent you, right?
Right.
And so your initial thing is not, hi, I'm John Abrams and I do this and this. Your initial phone call is like, oh, hi, Joe. Listen, I was just talking to John over at such and such where I just did this great gig, and he suggested I call you because he knows that you do the same thing, and he thought that your audience would appreciate what we did for them over there.
Well, that's the perfect strategy, and it works. In fact, that's one of the ways, one of the reasons you're doing this podcast. And I appreciate you doing it because I was talking to Carmen Telez, who I interviewed with episode 9,
right,
who has your book.
Ah,
and
beautiful.
So I asked her if she knows anybody that might be good for this podcast. She gave me a number of names. And then a couple of days later, she emailed me and said, oh, I have this book in front of me. It's from a Jerry Goldstein. And this book has really helped me a lot. I sent it to some friends. Why don't you contact her?
So there you go. And
my
here we are.
Contact was exactly what you're saying. Carmen Telez referred me.
Right.
Here's what she did. I'd love to have you on my podcast. So it was the exact thing that you're talking about.
Right. And just picture that every single person you do a gig with, you ask them for between 1 and 3 possible referrals. There's your database.
You
don't have to have a directory of cold calls to be making. Now you're completely making these friendly calls where people are answering the phone because they know the guy that sent you and they're happy to do that person a favor. They're at least going to listen to you. And since you came with this wonderful referral and expletive enthusiastic recommendation, they're going to be even more inclined to have a good listen as opposed to you trying to sell them something, right?
Yeah, nowadays it seems like people are even more trusting of friends that have had you before, have seen you before.
Exactly.
Because there's so many websites and so many ads and things people look at every single day. They're looking for some way to get through that clutter.
Well, I mean, you know, that old adage, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And when you think about if people are in the industry, you know, you could be trying to get somewhere quick by doing thousands of phone calls. And all it really takes is John sent me. He said, I have good songs. Please record one of my songs. Oh, okay. Or, you know, this guy just did a gig for me. It was fabulous. Give it a listen. Give it a try. Oh, okay. It's a total different mindset. And for the person making the thousands of phone calls that are feeling frustrated because they're getting blocked multiple times, they're getting lots of no's, you know, they spent the whole morning making going down their list of 100 phone calls, you know, they have nothing to show for it because it's like all people that don't even know you.
Oh yeah. Nowadays, a lot of the big companies, they're having computers make the initial phone call. And then once you pick up the phone, then a real person comes on. So you're also competing with that. I was just thinking about this yesterday. I had 4 phone calls from the same place, all computerized phone calls.
Yeah, right.
Blocking, and they were all from different numbers, but it was all the exact same company.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, you don't want to be a robocall. You want that personal thing going on. And that way, you know, when people say, oh, I sent out 1,500 mailing or a 5,000 piece mailing, well, can you follow up on 5,000 pieces? Why even bother, right? I mean, unless you have a relationship, like say, I know lots of children's artists that do send out their mailing in the end of the summer to all the schools and the PTAs. Well, all those people, they already know them. So they're going to have a lot more response rate. But if you're doing a blind mailing to people from a directory, a list of performing arts centers or, you know, event planners, and nobody's ever heard of you,
right?
You've got to do the follow-up, and you can't do that. You know, the next big piece of advice that I would give is make your call list or your mailing list for selecting gigs like 5 per week.
Oh.
If you do 5 per week and you really research, you hone in on who you want to target as your call, you take your list of referrals and you make these 5 calls during the week. Now, if you're having a great success, add another one. But don't start off the week with 100 calls you have to make. You'll be frustrated. You'll be overwhelmed. You won't get it done. Right. But can you make 5 calls? Yeah. And especially if you've done the research ahead of time and you know that those 5 calls are potentially calls from great referrals, that those are going to eventually be a one-for-one. Make a call, get a gig. Make a call, get a gig. You know, those are the odds that I always worked with.
Right. And you've also done the research and now you're talking to somebody who will pay your particular fee, who's in your field. And
right.
And you've
targeted them based on your touring preferences. They fit within your career plan. These are gigs that are your optimum gigs to go after. You're not making calls for the possibility of maybe this will be a good gig. You know in advance, this is the gig you want.
Do you have any other best practices when self-booking other than, you know, referrals?
Right.
Any other best practices for booking one-on-one type of gigs?
Okay, well, let's take an artist that maybe is doing some school gigs, they can do some corporate things, they can do adult gigs, they can, you know, they have a full range of the possibilities, maybe doing some workshops. And if you take a look at your own market, for instance, instead of just focusing in on the one venue or the one school that you know exists in the area or the one performing arts center, if you understand what it is you have to offer. You could do workshops, you could do concerts, you could do house concerts, you could do corporate events, you could do a keynote speech, you could do a school gig. So if you understand what you have to offer, then you can look at your community and say, well, here are a wide variety of possible performance opportunities. There's elementary schools, there's universities and colleges for a master class and possibly a concert series. There are civic centers or hotel convention centers or catering halls for potential corporate gigs. There are lots of people that I know in the area who maybe I could even do a house concert. So you look around your community and you say, there's multiple performance opportunities. I could be doing afternoon gigs. I could be doing evening gigs. You know, I can really stretch my performance situations among many different opportunities and don't have to rely just on one thing.
And I'm in LA in Orange County. So for me, if I were to take a look, all of those things are within 20 miles of me.
Exactly. And so the thing that most artists don't do is they don't see the breadth of opportunities that surround them. They focus in on, well, I'm a singer-songwriter, so I guess I got to play at McCabe's or at one particular venue that I happen to know of.
Wait, we have a McCabe's here in Santa Monica.
I know you do. I've booked many gigs there. Hello. I used it specifically. So you have this multiplicity of opportunities and most artists just focus in on the one gig. So if you're looking at this broad swath and assessing your community, you can go in and do multiple gigs in one town in one tour. So you don't have to say, oh, I'm playing LA on Thursday, Santa Barbara on Friday, Laguna, you know, Santa Cruz on Saturday. You can go, I'm going to be in LA for a week and I'm doing Elementary schools 3 days a week. I'm doing a library on a fourth day. I'm doing a university master class, topping off, on a Friday, and topping that off with a concert in their noon concert series. Then I'm doing, the reason I'm going out to LA is because I got a corporate gig that's happening on Saturday. And I happen to be going to LA because my cousin Joe lives in LA. I'm staying at their house. I'm saving money.
And you get to put that little per diem in your pocket instead.
That's right. Or the corporate entity that's bringing me in for the big gig is going to be paying at least three of those nights. You know, the night I come in before their event, the night of the event, and the day after. So now I've got three of those nights covered. I only have to cover a couple others, but then the elementary school is going to be putting me up at a local hotel. You know, so you're assessing the community. And by the way, there's radio in town. So if you happen to be a music person or somebody that can take advantage of a radio media outlet, then you can schedule something on a local radio station.
Yeah, what a lot of magicians do here in LA when they travel to another city or another state is they'll do mentalism on radio, and it
plays on
radio.
Right. But you see, you've looked at the community and you've seen what else is possible. And if you have a long view of this whole thing, then you have the possibility of tapping into venues that might be booking farther in advance. So all of that kind of, you know, it takes some time to get all of those pieces in your mindset and framework. But by having that wall calendar, you can start to say, okay, well, I've got to go to LA. What's in LA? What else is in LA that I don't know about? And how am I going to find out what would be perfect? So then you start that, then your research starts and you find out University of California, Los Angeles is right there. Okay, how can you tap into that? You know, you find out there's these various nightclubs in town. Are you the person to play a nightclub? How can you tap into that? There's performing arts centers around there and in Orange County and in Laguna Beach. And, you know, how can you tap into that? How can you make that LA trip be a week-long vacation, working vacation, you know, where maybe on either side you have a couple of days and the family joins you, something like that.
Yeah, so the overall lesson is, instead of letting your career take you wherever it takes you, take control of your own career.
Exactly.
And take a look at exactly where you want to be when, and arrange it and plan it yourself.
And even if you are working with an agent or a manager, by infusing this way of thinking into their planning for you, then they're able to, you know, maybe they'll book the main gig. But you define for them, don't just book me in LA and San Francisco like on the next night. Mm-hmm. Leave some room, leave some breath around each gig so I can then step in and plan the alternative type gigs, the gigs that they don't really want to have anything to do with, right?
Right.
The gigs that you can then step in, the elementary schools, they're not going to be booking elementary schools, and other kinds of niche-oriented type of gigs that they don't really want to have anything to do with. But if you create your conversation with anybody helping you around the fact that you need to do this planning and give yourself multiple gig opportunities in each market that you go to, then they'll plan better. You know, they can plan one gig on each Saturday night, and then you've got room in between. Or if you know that you just want to do a quick run out for the weekend and you want to hit LA, San Francisco, and, you know, Seattle all in one fell swoop, well, at least you know what you can do there, and then you just do some research around each of those towns for future gigs to return there and have, you know, a longer stay in those towns.
Right. And if you're very clear with your agent, now the agent has the artillery to book you for the right gigs at the right time.
That makes a whole lot of sense, right?
So what took you from having all this knowledge and doing your agent and manager business to writing books and putting together programs for it?
Well, after 20 years of doing booking and working in management and publishing and working with, you know, very small group of artists that I both managed and agented for, I thought, well, you know, I think I want to do something else and I want to put me back in my life. Actually, it was like one night of reading Michael Gerber's book, The E-Myth, The Entrepreneurial Myth, where that he offered up in one sitting, I just like devoured it, the idea of the worker, the manager, and the entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And where did I fit into those places? I thought, you know, I could change my agency and do things differently. I could, you know, just do something else and go work for an agency, or I could just do something else completely.
Yep.
And I kind of opted for doing something else completely, and I didn't know what that was going to be. It took a couple of months of winding down everybody's tours, booking spring, summer, fall tours for all the artists and finding them other agents and managers to work with. And then at one point, I think I hit upon this idea of, I read some book and it had lots of ideas for advertising, for direct sales advertising, and for coming up with how do you use the information you know and write a book about it.
Oh.
And in one sitting, I wrote two full-page ads for this book that I thought I might write about booking. And I placed the two full-page ads in trade magazines that were going to come out in September. This was May. And I said, well, if I get orders for this for this book, then I'll sit down and write the book.
Okay.
And, you know, basically it's called Testing the Market, although I didn't know that at the time. And so all during the summer, I was doing these interviews with artists on, you know, how do they do their booking? And I was interviewing my agent friends. I was interviewing presenters that I had worked with over the course of my career. And, you know, how do they decide on who they're going to book? And just getting really great snippets of information that eventually was going to go on the side panels of my soon-to-be written book.
Yes.
And then in September, when the ads came out, I started getting orders.
Oh, and that book is How to Be Your Own Booking Agent, The Musician and Performing Artist's Guide to Successful Touring?
Correct. The original book actually had a slightly different title. It was How to Be Your Own Booking Agent and Save Thousands of Dollars. which I tested that title with a lot of artists at the time, but then later, you know, removed that and came up with the current title. So it's now in its fourth edition. I just did an update this spring and summer. It has sold many, many, many thousands of copies of books around the world to artists all over. And I run into people all the time. They go, oh my God, I have your book.
Yeah, Carmen Tellez, number one.
There you go. And then people that have actually used my book to book their tours. And it's made a difference in lots of people's lives. So that, then from that, I also started doing coaching, started doing workshops, started getting invited to by arts councils around the country to come and do workshops. And I love it. And now I've taken a bunch of what I had done and put it into my online course, Booking and Touring Success Strategies and Secrets, and just had my fall session with about 14 artists that signed up, and we just finished our last video chat right here on Zoom. I loved it.
Oh, is that's a live
online? Well, it's a recorded course that has been done. I did it live, and now it's all recorded audio downloads, PDF downloads for action guides and transcripts and bonus modules. So, because I really felt like, well, if artists can download it, they can listen while they're driving. I didn't want them watching something while they're driving. So
that was my idea with this podcast, is that people can listen to it while they're driving.
While they're driving. They're touring artists. Hello.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I have it, you know, but then I was doing these weekly video chats with people that are in the course, if they had any questions or to discuss any modules and continue our learning by doing these video chats, and you know, most of the artists were able to arrange their schedule and sign on, but then I recorded it, of course, like you're doing here, and then would send them the audio of the live video right. chat. It was very fun. It was great working with all kinds of artists from all over the country and in Canada. This time we had artists in US and Canada, but in the past I've had artists from Belgium and Japan and all over joining in.
So when someone takes that course, they're seeing a lot of the things that you've done in the past.
Yeah, and it's like really, you know, I've given you like very brief information here, and that's like totally fleshed out with exercises it's 7 modules in the course. And it includes negotiation and contracts. It includes how to work with presenters, how to plan your tours. It includes how to deal with sponsorships, how to get paid playing benefits, and also targeting niche audiences. And each one has very specific actions to do and to try out and to, you know, work up into your career so that it really gives you a really full career. Like for instance, how many times have you been asked to do a benefit?
Oh yeah, many, many times.
Yeah, and how much have you gotten paid?
I've actually never done them because I don't do free shows.
There you go. Okay. Well, there's lots of artists out there that do lots of benefits and they don't get paid. But in this module on how to get paid playing benefits, I lay out a complete list of how to work with organizations that will be able to get money to pay the artist.
Oh, perfect. Sounds like it's the perfect thing for any variety artist.
Well, any type of artist that gets asked to participate in a cause and how to make a cause part of your career development. Pick causes, you know, focus in on things that you do care about as opposed to just everybody and their brother saying, oh, we're going to have a benefit because something or other happened.
Yeah.
And then it's not organized. Nobody gets paid. And well, that's not true. The sound people get paid.
Of course.
The hall gets paid, but the artists don't get paid.
Caterers get paid.
The caterers get paid. Everybody gets paid, but the artists. And I think that needs to change by changing the mindset of the organizers that you work with and finding organizers who really do a good job and a professional job of creating an event that's going to actually raise money.
Now, I dipped my toe into all of your hot tips by signing up for your Biz Booster Hot Tips.
Cool.
I'm loving the first one. So tell me, what can I expect there?
Well, every week you'll get another very short, anywhere from like 3 to 8 or 9 minutes long. I record them, but I send them out as an email, and you could either just read the email or you can click the link and go to my blog. And then you'll hear the audio recording of the Biz Booster Hot Tip. It covers every topic that artists are dealing with, from marketing to gig booking and specifics, you know, and every week it just focuses on one very specific aspect. So they're not broad-based. They're like, this week, do this. You know, if you want to do this, then here's what you do this week. And it focuses in on lots and lots of topics that all involve career development as a touring performing artist in whatever your genre, whatever your field, you know, it just doesn't matter because these are kind of universal things that are going to work if you're booking gigs and getting out there and you want to market your gigs. So there's marketing advice, there's negotiation advice, there's working on colleges advice.
They're the perfect length because I know I'm real busy. So what I did with this first one is I got up in the morning right before gigs. I clicked on that email and read it real quick, and I had the time to do it. I had the 5 minutes to do it,
right.
And it was perfect.
Right. And if you click on the link and you want to just listen to it, you could be brushing your teeth while you're listening to it.
Assuming we all brush our teeth.
Well, okay. Well, let's hope.
All right. I know your time is valuable, so I'm going to let you go in a minute, but do you have a horror story for us? Some kind of a
Well, here's a horror story about not planning well and not knowing how to read a map. So, you know, one of the things about touring is that as an agent, you have to book gigs and plan your routes, especially if you have artists that are driving.
Sure.
So out west, or, you know, in many, many places, there are cities with similar names, right? Mm. The only difference is what state they're in. Okay. So there was one time I was booking a Western tour for my artists who were driving in their van, and booked a gig in what I thought was a city only an hour away from the previous gig. And in fact, it was a city in another state 9 hours away from the previous gig.
Oh, no.
And didn't discover it until maybe 2 days before the gig. You know, I booked an advance hotel room, sent them a food basket, and they drove like mad. And I did all these whatever other kinds of arrangements I could make so they didn't have to load and unload their sound, and so that they can get on the road right after the gig. But yeah, that was a horror lesson.
Did they make it?
You know, yeah, they made it. But man, it was by the skin of their teeth.
Well, other than your own book, How to Be Your Own Booking Agent, do you have another one that you can recommend for us? And tell us why.
Yeah, I would recommend Tony Schwartz's book, The Power of Full Engagement. And the reason I love this book, it's because it helps you understand how to manage your energy as opposed to how to manage your time. And being a booking agent and making these phone calls, and especially for artists who are setting up themselves for, okay, I'm going to book my tour, I'm going to make all these phone calls this morning, or I'm going to practice for 8 hours. This book will help you understand how your body works in rhythms, and that in order to maximize your body's energy, you need to work in shorter chunks of time frame so that you're the optimum that you could be when you need to be your optimum.
Yeah.
So like an hour and a half, 90 minutes cycle is usually the time frame that it takes for your energy to be right there, ready for you to pull all the stops. And then, you know, when you hit about an hour, you know, your blood sugar's starting to wane a little bit, and you know, you eventually, you know, your butt is starting to be tired, your body is telling you, I'm going to be antsy here.
Yeah, that's nice. I'll go ahead and put that on my website so someone can just click on it and go right to Amazon and get it. Well, I am super aware of our time. I understand that you're very, very busy.
Oh, no problem.
I loved having you on. You have given
this
us
is
so
great.
Much value. I'm really glad you're here.
Good. I totally enjoyed it. I'm really glad that you're doing this for artists, because any tidbits of inspiration that can make an artist's day more fruitful, more productive, you know, I think is it really takes away the isolation of artists doing their own thing and knowing that they have resources to turn to.
Right. Something my friend David Scale said that was pretty interesting. He's a magician out of Orange County. He mentioned, it's funny how we're performing artists and our job is to perform in front of hundreds or thousands of people and entertain them, be friendly and fun. And yet our job is very solo and we're very alone because we're driving to and from the gig.
You're rehearsing, you're creating, you're making
we're doing
phone calls.
We're doing all of that by ourselves. So this
unless you have a team or a part of bandmates or whatever, you know. So, you know, having a network of people who can serve as resources is really, really important. I want to leave your folks and you with like one thought to help get you going in the morning. And this is like something that I often say, you know, to artists to think about, like before you have your first cup of coffee, before you get out of bed, if you just ask yourself the following question: what can I do today in the service of my art that can make a difference in someone's life tomorrow? How much more powerful would your day be in thinking about, you know, where to get the optimum gigs? Who are you going to serve? How can you make a better choice of preferences for how you want to tour? How can you reach out to a community that maybe isn't served as well? Or what else can you do that's going to be influential and inspiring to people that you are actually standing up in front of.
That's a great way to start your morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the rest of your day is fulfilling that, that thought.
Yeah. Yeah. As opposed to, oh, gotta get a gig, gotta get a gig.
Well, that doesn't get us very far.
No, I know. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Jerry, so much for doing my podcast.
Hey, John, I really appreciate you calling and emailing and putting this together so quickly. It was brilliant.
Oh, well, you were the one that suggested putting this together so fast with the date. It's wonderful. Now, where can some of my variety artists get a hold of you or your website? Give me some contact info.
Okay, cool. So I am at performingbiz.com. And there you will find my book, my online classes, some audio classes that you can actually just listen to, like how to, you know, hot tips on how to work with agents and managers. That's just like free audio classes. Sign up for the Biz Boosters. And there's tons of articles that you could read about every topic that is pertinent to a performing arts career.
Right. I read a number of your blogs. They're great. They're perfect.
Yeah, and book recommendations. You know, it's filled with resources. That's what I wanted, you know, my whole thing to be about is resources. You know, how to get people information that I know I didn't have when I was being a booking agent. You know, everything was kind of, okay, well, let's try this. Oh, hey, let's try that. Actually, when I was writing the book, I learned so much stuff that I wish I had had while I was doing the booking.
And now people can have that.
That's right. I thought, well, you know, if I didn't have it, somebody ought to be able to have it. So let's put it all together.
And now you do.
And now I do. Yeah. So
where do they go? Performingbiz.com, basically.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And the book is, you know, there's links to all those things. The How to Be Your Own Booking Agent book. I have another book, which was really a compilation of 100 of the Biz Booster hot tips that I put together. It's called Tiny Guide to Huge Success, 100 Biz Booster Hot Tips.
Oh, I think I saw that on your website.
Yeah, yeah, it's there. It's perfect. There.
Well, great. Well, thanks again, Jerry, so much for doing my podcast. And thanks to all my variety artists. If you found this podcast valuable, tell a friend. That's how we can spread the word. And feel free to reach me at my email is john@thevarietyartist.com or join my Facebook group at The Variety Artist, where you can ask me to ask our guests questions. And in fact, Jerry, you were the mystery guest that I talked about on my Facebook.
Oh, cool. I love being a mystery guest. That's so, very exciting.
I put a bunch of question marks and I said, mystery guest booked.
Soon. Wow, that's great. Oh, you know, like you can also, folks can reach me at jg@performingbiz.com too.
JG, okay, I'll put that on my website too.
Yeah.
So join my Facebook and visit Jerry's website.
I actually, on my Facebook page, I've actually got Performing Biz Success Strategies on my as my Facebook for the biz folks. Yeah, so that's where you'll find links to my Biz Booster hot tips as well. There'll be a link there. It flows through there every Monday, and you'll be able to just click on that link to get to the audio on the blog.
Oh, nice! I'm gonna click on that. I haven't even seen that yet, so I'm gonna join that group.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think I'm not sure that it's a group really. It's just it's my Facebook page.
Okay. Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm gonna jump on in there. I'll friend you.
Yeah. Cool. Cool.
All right. So visit my website at www.thevarietyartist.com, where you'll find super informative blogs and all the show notes from today's wonderful interview with my brand new friend Jerry.
Good.
Go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
Absolutely. Thanks, John. You're a terrific host and podcast mentor for you know, how to do these things. It's great.
Thank you, Jerry. You have been a terrific guest.
I love it. I love it.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Enjoy your day.
Thanks.
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist, but your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.